This is 20 Minutes for Tech, episode 15, Brain Power. It's all about the connections. Welcome to 20 Minutes for Tech, your instructional technology podcast. I ran across an unexpected gem today and just couldn't pass up the opportunity to share it with you. Dr. Debbie Estes dropped by our IU today for a seminar titled Brain Power, How to Create Classrooms That Maximize Learning. It had nothing to do with technology, but after hearing Ian Jukes at NECC talk about how today's students' brains are wired differently than my generation's, well, he left me wanting to learn more about how this gray thing in my head works. Debbie's presentation was incredibly informative as well as interactive. She taught us all about the parts of the brain, the basic functions of those parts, and how they work together to help us learn. The best thing about Debbie's presentation is that I've been able to retain that information and could possibly do a pretty good job explaining it to you, but that's another podcast all in itself. Here's the teaser description of what Debbie talked about today. Brain Power, How to Create Classrooms That Maximize Learning. During this highly interactive presentation, participants will discover how to take what we know about how the brain learns and use it to plan instruction that will maximize student learning. Dr. Estes is a well-known speaker in the area of brain research and will demonstrate how this knowledge can directly impact what teachers do in the classroom. Topics to be covered include the fundamentals of how the brain processes information and how learning affects the brain, also the process of memory and the hooks for gaining attention, the importance of making connections, and also using a variety of strategies in our teaching, how to create experiences that optimize learning in our classrooms. Debbie was kind enough to sit down with me and chat over lunch just for this podcast, and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to her much more than listening to me. So with that, here's Dr. Debbie Estes on Brain Power. So we're here with Debbie Estes and a Brain Power seminar. And so far, we're halfway through and I can't wait for the afternoon. She's totally captured, I think, all of our 66 folks' attention here and kept us on task and having fun while we're learning and being very actively engaged. So Debbie, how did you get started with Brain Power and this whole idea?
Well, first of all, my doctorate is in educational administration, and that has absolutely nothing to do with the brain.
Right, right.
So about 17 years ago, I was at a national staff development conference, a pre-conference, a two-day actually pre-conference, and Dr. Pat Wolf was the teacher, and I absolutely fell in love with her. I fell in love with her subject matter. At that time, I was working at a state agency, and I was providing training for 1,200 different superintendents and trustees. Yeah. And I was working with them, and I came back, and I was so excited about all this brain research, and I said, can I write up a module? And they said, no, we don't need that. So I just wrote up the module on my own, and I thought, you know, I'm going to share this with people. And I just warded Dr. Wolf until she became my mentor. And she is the most classy lady, and she is so absolutely smart. And so I've learned actually from her, and then everything I've read. So this has not been a formal education, it's been a self-education.
Mm-hmm. Now you went into the idea of brain monitors in a classroom. Mm-hmm. Could you expand on that for
our
folks?
Yeah, I could. I was in a session and I was talking about how important movement was to the brain. And I said, and a teacher emailed me actually after being in the session, and she said, Debbie, what I did is I went back to my class and I thought, I taught my kids about movement concept and how important it was. And then I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to assign one student in my class to be a brain monitor each week. And I said, the brain monitor's responsibility is to watch me and for me to watch them to see when we needed a state change. And I taught the children how to look at states and what exactly states were, and how to know when we need a change. And then what I would do is I would let them come up with a state changer. And she said it had to be with my approval, and it had to last only 45 seconds. Okay. And the kids would do it, and they would sit down and start immediately back to work.
And it worked really well.
It worked very well for her.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I really like that a lot, because I think we can do that. Well, you've done it today with us.
Oh, yeah.
And it works very effectively.
Oh, yeah. It does.
Rather than a lecture. And kind of paralleling on that, when it comes to state changes, you also talked a lot about reflection and how important it is when it comes to reflecting on your learning. And you told this little story about the goldfish.
There was a research. First of all, reflection probably is one of the key things that we're missing in our society, right? Not only in our classroom. And we don't learn from experience, we learn from reflecting on experience.
Right.
And what's happening is whenever we're teaching, kids are not learning. They're only learning when we stop teaching and we let their brains make meaning of it.
Right.
And then check that meaning out. There was 100 goldfish in this experiment, and they were tagged. 50 of them were A and 50 of them were B. They were put in a large tank, and then they had this net that came down about one quarter of the way down the tank. And when the fish would swim, they would hit the net and they would be shocked.
Okay.
Well, all 100% learned to turn right before they hit the net. And that was the skill that they were being taught. All of them learned it.
Right.
Then they took group A and put it in an aquarium, and they just let them swim around. Then they took group B and they put them in an aquarium and they taught them a new skill.
Okay.
Then after it was finished, then they took both groups and put them back into the original tank. And one of the groups had forgotten about the net, and they hit the net and were shocked and had to relearn how to turn.
Right.
But one group completely remembered it and had no problem. So my question was to the group, which group was it that remembered to turn?
Right.
And I would say about 60% of the class said it must have been A, and they were right on, because what we do is we teach a skill and we don't give consolidation time and we don't give time to make meaning, and we teach another skill right on top of it and then another skill right on top of it, and that's the reason we have so many broken kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just not retaining that. I know myself as a learner, been to a lot of different professional development sessions, and unless I have that time to reflect during the session, I'll lose so much of that.
They say only 3% of lecture mode will have a chance of being retained.
And you were also talking about the different percentages, almost in the sense of learning styles,
yeah.
Oratory and
tactile. 40, yeah.
Right, uh-huh. Right. And the list was again?
It was 46% of the kids, when the learning became difficult, needed to see it. And 35% needed not only to see it, but they needed to do something with it to be tactile, kinesthetic.
Right.
And only 19% learned through the lecture format when the learning became difficult. Not that we don't have our children need to learn all those modes, but we need to be very aware of educators that a lot of us don't learn through lecture format either.
Right. I think we've seen that today, too, because everybody here is still energized. It's
exactly.
Halfway through,
mm-hmm.
And I was ready for more.
Good deal.
Which was great.
Good deal.
So,
I was looking at your notes there about learning styles. I use Anthony Gregoric Learning Styles Delineator, and he's a gentleman that is very, very smart, and I started using his delineator about 15 years ago. It's very, very simple, and it says that we top to four different learning styles.
Okay.
And I think as a master teacher, what you have to do is you have to be aware of your learning style, but also know that you've got to synthetically add to your repertoire of teaching the attributes of those other three mind styles, because we have to be very aware that that's going to affect learning also.
One kind of alarming statistic that you were talking about, we were a chemically dependent nation.
That's a Debbie Esteticism all the way.
Tell me more about that.
Well, the most hilarious thing I saw the other day was, I actually heard it on Sirius Radio as I was driving, because I'm in my car a lot, and there is a new drug out for dogs with ADD. Now, I think that is hilarious. Not only do we drug everybody else. Now we got to drug our dogs that are barking too much. And I think that just shows where we are as a nation. Mm-hmm. Not that some of it isn't necessary. I'm very much aware of that. But right. We are a very chemically dependent nation. You can look at all of our advertisements on TV, and it's just crazy.
Maybe that even goes back to learning styles. If you can't engage someone through lecture, that doesn't mean that they're ADD.
No.
That means they just need maybe something else.
Yeah, a little more active learning.
Yeah, a little more engagement.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Yeah.
Cool. Keeping on that idea of active learning, engagement, and such, I was talking with another teacher on a break, and he said, this is really, some wonderful ideas and such here, but his question, at least to me, was how would I keep those kids on task with this type of learning, with this active engagement learning?
You cannot have active learning unless you have policies and procedures in place, solid.
Okay.
And besides, that is a safe environment. Whenever you have predictable outcomes and you have predictable policies and procedures, then that provides a more safe environment in the first place. But right. when you have those down, then and only then can you go to really active engagement. If you have a class that you're not in control of, don't even try this.
Gotcha.
This would be horrible. But once you've got a class that you've got and you know that they know what it's about, and you teach them about the brain and you teach them why they are doing this, and if they abuse it, then we don't get to do it again.
Right.
And it's not going to help you in studying. But I mean, but you got to have those policies and procedures in place before you do it.
I can imagine the chaos you would have if your class was, if you didn't have a hold of your class.
Oh, yeah. This wouldn't help at all.
One of the pieces that I really liked, and I think I'll use it for myself, not only for other folks, is the stop.
Stop. Think a minute. Think about what you're doing. I love
that. And go from there. Yeah, that's huge.
But actually, for that to really have the meaning, you must have taught kids what that means
in the brain. Right.
You must have taught them. But amygdala, what do you do when you're in your amygdala? Let kids brainstorm it.
Right.
What do you do? What do you think I do when I'm in my... Okay, what can we do to get people out of their amygdala for the next 30 minutes, and then we can say, okay, amygdala break,
right.
in your amygdala for 2 minutes. Okay, now, back. I mean, we could have fun with that.
Oh, yeah.
But you can let kids know that this is, we have 2 minutes for amygdala break, and then we're going to get back to frontal lobes.
Right. And cool. Just as a refresher for amygdala, that's more of the emotion part of the brain.
It's the two little organs in your brain. They're about the size of almonds. And my goodness, they're the fight or flight syndrome. And I mean, they can absolutely just send out the senses for it can take your whole brain over. In fact, we don't run because we're afraid.
Right.
We're afraid because we run. Because what happens is the thalamus gets the information, it sends it to the amygdala, this is scary, you better start running. And our limbs pick up and start running, and then it hits the frontal lobe and we go, ooh, we must be really scared, we're running.
I gotcha.
but we're responding to the amygdala before it ever gets to the frontal lobe.
Now, I knew coming into this, obviously the title of your session really is Brain Power, and I started to wonder, for a little while you were actually teaching us about the dendrites and the axons and the whole part of the brain, mm-hmm. the different parts of the brain. But like you said, it makes sense to teach your kids about that.
Exactly.
So they understand what the heck's going on in their heads.
And a lot of people don't see the importance of that, but that is, for educators, it's vitally important for us to know what's going on, how we can impact it, but even more than that, for the kids to know, oh my gosh.
Right.
It is fascinating when they know. They can even give us ways of getting them out of their amygdala.
Right.
They can talk to us.
Sure.
But doesn't that make them more of a participant in the learning process? It's just, it's great.
Right. And it also shows, I think, that you care about what they're thinking and about
exactly.
where they are.
Well, there's the key. Where are they? You're
right.
starting where they are.
Right.
Which is,
right.
Sometimes crazy that we start at a place and we just assume that everybody's right there and we just go with it. And I hate to be in those kind of classes myself when I'm learning, when people assume that I know and I don't.
Now, obviously, you're very passionate about this.
I am.
If there was one message that you could kind of spread the word to teachers, to educators, to administrators, well, to anybody who's a learner, which is basically everybody, right? What might that message be, or what might that be?
I would probably focus it on my favorite word in the English language, and that is connections. I think that we need to connect what is taught to what is tested. Okay. We need to connect third grade to fourth grade.
Right.
We can need to connect the English department to the athletic department. We need, I mean, just fingers out there connecting all of content, and then over and beyond content, we must connect as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it becomes powerful.
Yeah, I felt that connection when I first walked in, and
yes,
you walked around and said hi to everybody.
Exactly.
Shook their hand, said hello. That connection right there.
There's nothing
you got
more
me.
Powerful. There's right. nothing more powerful. Because once you got that human connection and then you build on the content, you're going.
I was going to ask you about Ian Jukes, and I know you said you got a lot of the background.
I know who he is, but I don't have a lot of the background,
right.
Yes.
Just one of his major thoughts that I got thinking about when I saw the Brain Power, your session coming up. One of his big things when it comes to brain research with kids today is the whole idea of digital native versus digital immigrant.
Uh-huh.
You and I would be considered digital immigrants because we didn't grow up with computers. We
yes.
didn't grow up with the mass media. We didn't grow up with the TVs and the multimedia and screen time.
Yes.
Whereas our kids today are. One of the things he also says is that kids now learn differently than we did. They're kind of rewiring their brains to deal with all these different types of media, all these different types of stimulus, I guess
mm-hmm.
you could really
mm-hmm.
say, when it
mm-hmm.
comes down to it.
My thoughts on that is I definitely think that we are rewiring the brain. Is that good or is that bad?
Right.
I definitely believe that. I believe that you can look at it as glass half full and glass half empty. I think that the screen time that kids get can hinder or that it can help. But whenever it's the only way of learning, then you have got isolated learning, you have got a cut down of human connection, which very much bothers me. I think we are becoming an isolated nation. Even in my job right here, I work from my home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I used to work with people. Even if I didn't like them, they were people.
Right.
And I've even isolated myself even more. And I think that's something that we're going to contend with in the future because of screen time. But it's not that I don't think it's good. I think it's great. We've got so much information right at our fingertips. But, yeah, I do think we're going to learn differently, and we are learning differently, mm-hmm. whether that's good or bad.
Well, thanks very much for taking the time here out of your lunchtime to chat with me. And I so look forward to this afternoon.
Thank you, David.
I'm just psyched.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thanks again to Debbie for sitting down to chat with me. I hope this episode prompts you to learn more about the brain and how it actually works when it comes to learning. I think it's very important for both teachers and students to have a basic understanding about how that gray matter upstairs is working for us. The more we understand about how we learn, the better steps we can take to make learning more effective and more fun. I have to say, I hadn't had this much fun and learned so much in a one-day professional development session ever before. If you get the chance to hear Debbie speak, run, don't walk. She'll keep you entertained and energized all day long. You'll have fun, and you'll learn a ton about yourself and your students. Okay, well, it finally looks like I'm staying within the 20 or so minute format that I've tried to, so I'll end this podcast here. Stay tuned for more informative episodes coming up in the next few months. I'll be chatting with Kel Smith of Enicto LLC. Kel will help us understand more about web usability and also what to look for when designing or having someone design an accessible website, something every school district needs to consider when building their district web pages. I'm also hoping to have an exclusive interview with Daniel Pink, author of A Whole New Mind. We'll be chatting about his latest work, Johnny Bunko, the last career guide you'll ever need. So with that, thanks for listening, and I'll see you here next time on 20 Minutes for Tech, your instructional technology podcast.